My property insurance was deleted from the exceptions to liability insurance. I think I see why the additions were made in the de-engrossed version, but I'm not sure why property insurance was deleted.
That was a amendment and a motion made by Representative Hanlon, if I remember correctly. And I don't recall, perhaps Representative Springer might be able to address that. I don't recall why. I remember the debate, but I don't remember the content. I remember the debate taking place, but I don't remember the reason why he made the motion.
Well, all right. I don't think, yeah, that's...
Perhaps counsel can enlighten us.
All right.
My memory is that it was simply redundant, that the definition contains damage to property, and to include property insurance was just surplus.
Okay. Well, on page 23, now here is one, I think this is a change in substance here. It has to do with the cancellation.
Cancellation of entire lines.
Cancellation of entire lines and allowing the insurer or the insured to have a hearing. I guess that's something the House omitted. Again, counsel, when you say not in D at the bottom of page 23, is that supposed to be not in C?
Not in C, yes, I apologize.
Maybe was that in the subcommittee that you were on, or David, or somebody else?
We were all on it.
We were all on that one. Is there any?
Your question is why is line or sub four in the C and gross not in there and the requesting of the hearing?
Yeah, right. What about that?
Well, I defer to counsel, but there was testimony with regard to how many hearings we might be obligating the insurance commissioner to, and whether that was mechanically feasible, given the staff of going from 67 to 80 and looking at all the cancellations that may occur and who that would apply to. That's just general discussion.
Sure. Are there any changes between the two that somebody wants to bring up here? I'm sure Senator Cohen has gone through this, but and I just kind of left this up to her. Prior approval of rates, of course, now there is a substantial change in your approach compared to ours. And I would say that this is, and this may be just my own view, but I would say of all of the changes made in the insurance side of this package, that is the one that I would have a lot of difficulty in accepting, because it does go to the very heart, it seems to me, of the cost of insurance in Oregon. And been a file in you state, if you're going to let insurance companies raise rates 25% without oversight by the commissioner, are you really regulating insurance rate increases any better than you are now? But Commissioner Driscoll's rule aside, which doesn't have any statutory basis, but what's your thinking on that, or was your thinking on that? In fact, doing away with the oversight provisions on rate increases. What's that?
Well,
thank you.
Well, and I can touch on it. That council can cover the insurance side of it. The fact of the matter is, what we're trying to do, the insurance commissioner does have a standing rule, and it does have the figure of 25% in it. We first dealt with raises of 25% within a 180-day period, and we, at the insurance commissioner's request, struck that 180-day issue. I'm sure you heard from your constituents also about 400% increases, 180% increases. This is on certain lines and deals with either up or down movements of 25% to try and wild fluctuations are what we're trying to get at. I'm sure the other committee members could speak for themselves on why they voted for it.
Well, I would only add that it seemed to me that this section the commissioner actually signed off on, is that? That was the reason why we went with this section. We tried through the course of looking at the insurance sections to have the commissioner in the room, and we would actually call him forward and say, is this the way you want it? And he would usually sign off one way or the other.
In fact, Senator, you should know, I just put right to Ted as to what else he needed. You know, what is in here that you could make you a stronger commissioner? These are the types of things that he felt adequately addressed his concerns and needs and didn't ask for anything else.
Yeah, Dick, go ahead.
I believe I don't know, Mr. Sheriff, at this point, or at what point during your hearings on these issues, you had the benefit of the insurance commissioner's testimony. We did have Mr. Miller, who's here today, working with us section by section, and many times we had the insurance commissioner here to make it clear what his opinion, what his desires were, and I think in many, if not most, instances, we tried to follow a track of what it was the insurance commissioner said he thought he could do effectively. And again, it may be that a more specific response could come from the insurance commissioner, the representative of the insurance commissioner.
Well, you're probably right. Now, I'll tell you frankly, on this, Joyce Cohn was a subcommittee of one, and she and counsel spent a lot of time with the insurance. No, there she is now. Senator Cohn, I'm glad you're here because I was pleading ignorance. And we are looking at, right now we're looking at page 26. And I was getting ready to explain why I was not jumping into the fray here because you were the subcommittee, the work of counsel and the insurance commissioner, putting together this language, and there has been a substantial change now on the ability of companies to increase rates over what the Senate version was, and I thought maybe you might want to address some of those questions.
Well, I think I need to hear for sure from, and I haven't had a chance to talk with the commissioner, this, as it's drafted now, doesn't seem like it gives much certainty to anybody. It's sort of like if you file for a decrease or an increase, you never know what to expect. What kind of, whether the commission,
it says, I suppose you say determined by rule of what constitutes a significant increase. We really dealt with that and that. We provided for hearings after a certain level, if you'll recall, a certain kind of change by rule. The commissioner could determine what constituted a significant enough increase or decrease to have a hearing. It seems to me what you have here is just a straight exceeding 25%, which is like I'd have to hear why the people feel like this is any change from the current law or current practice. Unless maybe the commissioner has changed his position since the last time we talked to him, and that he doesn't really want to have any change from current practice, and we'll carry on that debate. I just want to know whether the House members felt real strong about how this came down and what the considerations were that made it change, if you have any information to share.
It seems to me, Senator, that in this section particularly, we called the commissioner forward, and there was a debate throughout subcommittee and full committee about whether what we were asking the commissioner to do would ever be, given the staff, would ever be able to be accomplished. And so there were things taken out that, you know, the commissioner, I think, just felt that he wasn't going to be able to accomplish, even though we put in the statute, given their resources, even with the Ways and Means increase that is supposedly down the road for that office. And I think we called him forward and asked him about this section, and these were his recommendations. I'm not sure if we got reasons for them, aside from the fact that he didn't think that we'd be able to implement what was written in the Senate version, so.
Okay, I'd ask your indulgence then to have, when we start really taking actions on it, to discuss more fully then, and I'm, you know, not my intention to force the commissioner to do something that's impossible to do, the resources aren't there, and yet we have to have a full understanding of what the expectations are, whether we really do have a file and use system, or what are the terms and conditions that he's likely to disqualify someone. I think that's the piece that I'm wanting to get some commitment from, or some understanding.
I think when we get to that point, Mr. Chair, when we're going to be making decisions one way or the other, I think we should for sure have the insurance commissioner here just to answer and respond, so we all feel satisfied that he's going to be able. I think we wanted something that he felt was going to work, and not set himself or his office up for failure because we gave him something that was going to be impossible to do, or just wasn't realistic, either in terms of the resources or just what they felt was really going to have impact.
We'll do that for sure.
I just want to add one. I appreciate your effort to come up with some kind of a standard, but a significant increase or decrease in rates doesn't give me the comfort that I can go back to my constituents and say, we're going to control that wild fluctuation. I really like, now we can debate over the percentage as to whether that will do anything, but I think we've got to set some kind of a standard there, rather than let it switch from commissioner to commissioner or by rule, and it would make me feel more comfortable that we did
Chairman,
something.
We started out in the Senate saying any.
Yeah.
I mean, any. And then we said any increase or decrease has to be approved prior to change. And then we said by rule you can decide whether you have a hearing on a half a percent increase or decrease. But so that's where we've come from. And I agree with you because that piece had any.
I guess further comment, Bill, was that at least part of our discussion, I guess, was. Obviously, we put a lot of trust, we hope, in our insurance commissioner, but we recognize that that individual could change at any time. And there was, I think, some concern that if you did put a set figure in, then you were less likely to see policy change with a different insurance commissioner. Although I think, on the other hand, some argument was made or could be made that it's important to give some discretion. Because in different lines of insurance, you know, what may seem to be a ridiculous or catastrophic increase in one line of insurance may be very reasonable in the context of another line of insurance. And it's so those are a couple of things that I guess weighed upon our decision, and I certainly would like to hear further from the insurance commissioner.
Yep.
So we're
good.
Satisfied that we're doing
one final thing, Mr. Chairman. Yeah. The 25 seems very, very high. I mean, I'd like to cut it down to 10. If that's what we're looking at here, but we need to see what kind of impact that is, and remember, it's just review prior to effective date. If it's 10% different, it's not. I don't think that's it. We need to talk about what kind of a burden that gives anybody.
Yeah, I think we'll spend some time with the insurance commissioner's office on this area. Then I tell you, in the remaining time before you folks go back down to your floor session, we go to Judiciary Committee. Council hasn't got to this part yet in our book, but I think it well to bring it up now. I just want to, if you've got the original bill with you and you look on the last page, page 49, there are two sections in there that the House, you won't see that, Joyce, in your book.
Okay.
Hasn't got to that yet. In the bill, we have section 151. No insurer may require membership in a professional association as a condition of issuance of medical malpractice insurance to a physician. And no insurer who issues such insurance may assess any surcharge or offer any discount based on whether or not the physician's a member of a professional association.
No, I have the sections memorized.
Does, okay, you, have you got the section in mind that I'm speaking of?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I'm sure you, yeah. There probably isn't enough time to discuss that fully now, but at least I wanted to kind of end in the last 10 minutes we have available to hearing some of the reasoning, the basis why the House people put those two sections, to put that the section in there, those two issues.
Well, if I, it seemed to the committee that, and this doesn't just affect, I find out now afterwards, this doesn't just affect the medical malpractice carrier that it supposedly affects in this state. It also affects some agreements between trade unions and insurance companies that right now exist as well in the state. It didn't seem to the committee, and there was a lot of debate about this, that an insurance company should be able to force anyone to join any association as a qualification for insurance. And speaking personally, it's a section that I feel very strongly about. It doesn't, it frankly stinks to allow an insurance company, an industry that, especially in the medical malpractice field, we found out on the 15th of May in our committee that the data that has been thrown about from the medical malpractice carriers and the trial attorneys in this state has all been incorrect, that the medical malpractice carriers now have, one in particular, CNA, gave the insurance commissioner's office on the 15th of May entire new data, I believe, for the last 5 or 7 years, because the data that exists in the insurance commissioner's office is incorrect. And that, I bring that up only to illustrate the fact that supposedly the regulation for this industry nationwide is at the state level. The insurance industry wants to keep it that way, and yet the laws we passed regarding reporting requirements basically have been violated, whether it's the insurance industry's fault or the Board of Medical Examiner's fault or the insurance commissioner's office's fault. I guess we're not going to find out, because the Attorney General has asked, isn't interested at this point in intervening in that process as we requested, or I requested him to do. I just felt that because of, even with the laws we passed today, I'm not comfortable with allowing any insurance company to force someone to join an association if they meet all the other qualifications and criteria and risk involved in getting an insurance policy. And it's not just, I now find out, it's not just medical malpractice carriers, but there are some agreements between unions and I'm sure other associations in the state, aside from the ones that we know about here, where in order to get insurance, you have to join that association. And I just don't think that that's a good way to do business in a supposed capitalist society.
Well, can I ask you on that then, David? Would that, if this, if this applied across the board, then would there be some insureds who wouldn't be able to get insurance anymore because they didn't belong to a particular trade union? And does that, doesn't...
No, it doesn't preclude the insurance company from writing a policy. I'm sure there are other reasons they will find to not write the policy. That's been suggested. What we're simply saying is you can't get all the way through your, you know, 5 pages of forms, for instance, I understand you fill out as a physician. And if you're not a member of the Oregon Medical Association, as an example, you can't be told, yes, you qualify for insurance, but we won't write it for you unless you join this particular association.
Did you say that there were other similar situations, that is, where someone had to belong to a trade union to get insurance?
Right.
And so you would be as opposed to that as you would be to the doctors having to belong to the OMA?
Yes. It's just a feeling on my part that I don't think that, given the regulatory atmosphere surrounding the insurance industry, which in some cases in the past, and that's why I bring up the case of the reporting, hasn't really existed, we really don't know what's going on, that on top of that, the insurance company has the authority to order someone to join an association as part of the package. I think that just reeks of kind of being a sweet deal.
situation. Been so far.
So that is, perhaps Representative Phillips would like to address it further, but that was my feeling on it, and I feel pretty strongly about it.
Okay. Anything to add?
There's strong feelings on both sides.
I see. Okay. You don't necessarily agree with everything that he said, then?
No. But there's strong feelings. You know, there is. You mentioned the capitalistic free enterprise system. It's based on a series of standards and norms, and by belonging to an association, you have to meet some of those. It might be cost control issues or preventative care issues, when you talk about trade unions or doing certain standard issues. And I lost this battle once. I don't want to refight it
sure,
right here.
Yeah. No. Let me just also add there that the other part of what was discussed the same evening that we addressed this in subcommittee was allowing the medical association in this state to act as an agent for one of the medical malpractice carriers and receive the sum $600,000 to $700,000 in agency fees for writing that insurance. I have no problem with that. I think it doesn't bother me in the least that the physicians of the state who belong to the medical association are going to be able to garner that extra $600,000 or $700,000, but at the same time, because they're going to act as an agent for that carrier, I don't think that carrier should be able to force people to join that association that is acting as an agent. I think that is a little much for me. So, and I also would argue as vehemently for keeping the section in to allow the medical association to be the agent, because essentially, from the testimony we heard, although they're not called an agent for that particular carrier, they might as well be. And they ought to be getting, instead of the benefits they receive now in the form of training and programs that are set up, preventative programs, which amount to, I guess, a couple $100,000 a year. On top of that, they ought to be getting the $700,000 for writing the insurance as well. That was my feeling.
No.
All right.
Dick, did you have anything further on that?
Well, I would just underscore, I guess, that Representative Dix has indicated this was an area that received a fair amount of attention, and I think the majority of the members of the committee came down supporting the two separate provisions, but realizing that, that wasn't perhaps going to make everybody happy. We did, I think, recognize that OMA and association, which is not the licensing group as such, but they have over the years on behalf of their members become very involved in insurance, and some people may like that, some people may not like that, but for the reasons that Representative Dix has stated, they feel very strongly that it is a benefit to their members, and apparently their members concur that they have that kind of unique relationship. And we were willing to recognize that with the provisions that allowed them basically to take the agents out of the picture. I'm sure that didn't make the agents very happy, because that whatever OMA gets means that the agents won't be getting that. But on the other hand, I think we also recognize that because of the limited availability of malpractice insurance for different categories of physicians, people who are licensed in this state, that it was important that no one group be discriminated against because they did not belong to a voluntary organization, notwithstanding the fact that they have had a close relationship with the insurance carrier. And it's not directed at the OMA, it applies to the insurance carrier. We just thought overall as a matter of policy.
Kind of like one of those statutes that says if you're in a city of 300,000 or more, why, you can do such and such, and we all know it applies to the city of Portland only.
Well, not exactly, but...
And not to interrupt Dick's train of thought, but since that time, I found out that it affects not only the city of Portland, as you would suggest, Senator, but there are trade unions that have... and I'm sure that if we open this up to hearing and investigated it, that we'd find a number of associations and insurance companies, and they provide insurance if you're a member of that particular association. So I don't think it's just the OMA. In fact, I have been contacted by
one union in particular that's a little upset about this section as well.
Oh, no. The way I get it here now, Representatives Dix and Springer are... strongly inclined toward the retention of subsection 1 of 151, and Representative Phillips has got strong reservations about that approach.
Well, I'm not certain if the House is not representing a united front on this issue, in that we'd also be representing a united front on the other sections of the bill as well. Is that
I'm
correct?
I'm not going to refight this issue.
Okay. I kind of read a little bit between the lines there. But on subsection 2 now, I'd like to know, this is the OMA CNA, what's been referred to as the sweetheart contract thing. Are the three of you... are you all together on that particular issue, or is there some difference of opinion in the House conferees on that?
Well, I don't think so. Okay. I think everybody was pretty much united on that
on
issue.
On that part.
Yeah.
Well, okay, I guess I'm going to have to leave, and the council's going to have to leave for the Judiciary Committee. I'll just, I think, gentlemen, we can kind of assume maybe that we can get back together again tomorrow at the same time. I would just close by saying that I've got some serious reservations about each last word punctuation mark in the entire section 151, and we can all think about that when the time comes. Okay.
Well, our council have the books completed by tomorrow's meeting. Is that
yes?
What you expect?
That's the plan.
Yes.
We'll be all done with that, and then now tomorrow might be a time that we could get the insurance commissioner's office to come over. Can we do that tomorrow afternoon?
Please. Bob, would Commissioner Kulongoski be available tomorrow?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Springer, my name is Bob Miller, Deputy Insurance Commissioner. I will check with the Commissioner. I'll advise him of the issues that you'd like to discuss with him tomorrow, and I'm sure he'll make himself available.
Well, alerting that we might want him here between 1 and 3 tomorrow, that might be a good time to go into the insurance regulations. Okay.
Well, let's make it more specific. Why don't you just let him know we want him here at 3 o'clock, and if he can't make
not
it
three,
to
not three.
1 o'clock.
One
and if
o'clock.
He can't
yeah.
make it to advise us, the chair.
Of course, I'll
yeah,
do that.
Okay, thanks very much. We'll be there.